You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It's time for the Wrestling Perspective podcast. We are almost like the traveling Wilburys of wrestling podcasts, like a super group put together to talk wrestling. That guy is Lars Fredrickson. I'm Dennis Farrell. We are going to hit your emails. Then we got David Finley coming back. The last time he was on, I think it was September 2001. That's how long ago. It feels like it was like
2001?
Yeah.
No, we've had him on since then.
Was it? When I went through
2001, Dennis, is 22 years ago.
Oh, was he even born? I meant either way, I'm not good with years.
2000, man. Maybe 21.
Sounds about right. Hey, listen, enjoy the first podcast of 2014. We can't wait for 2015 to come along. We got a lot to talk about. Let's hit these emails. We're going to start with one. By the way, you're used to this. For me, this is new. I got recognized in public.
Oh, yeah? What was his name?
His name was Tyler Call. He even sent us an email.
That's nice.
On a first date with a girl. Great. Yep, going great. I had to run out because we met at a bar in a mall, and the mall was closing. So I ran around, got her car, and drove it back around. It was like 6 degrees. I didn't want her to run out there. I come through the wrong entrance. This guy
Wait, you were on a first date?
Yeah.
Okay. Tyler wasn't on a first date.
No, Tyler was at work, which I walked into. Oh, gotcha. And he goes, Dennis? I go, yeah. Like, I think, Tyler, I'm going to tell you the truth. For a half second, I'm like, do I know this guy? Is this a friend of mine? Am I going to be like an a-hole if I don't recognize him? Like, hey, man, how are you? Like, you know, when someone greets you, like they know who you are, and then you don't know if it's a fan or if it's a friend or someone you knew in your past. So you're trying to figure it out in your head as he's talking. That's what was going on. He's like, me and my buddy RJ, we listen to your podcast. We love it.
Oh, sick. Sick.
Well, yeah. I was like, this is awesome. So that's, I said, awesome. Hey, write in, let me know your name so I can give you a proper shout out. So Tyler, thank you. Tyler has a question. So I've had this what if thought going through my head after the Royal Rumble. The Bloodline is the top storyline in professional wrestling at this moment. So in my opinion, it'd be genius if WWE had the Bloodline turn on Roman Reigns at the Elimination Chamber, fall in line behind Sami Zayn as a new head of the table. Imagine the pop from the crowd, different ways you would have them turn on each other. But could you imagine Sami Zayn carrying the Bloodline after Elimination Chamber? There's so much more, but I shortened the email. But essentially, that's what Tyler wants to know. By the way, Tyler, thank you. And by the way, before you answer this, Tyler, fuck you. Because I was like, Tyler, will you come back and pretend you just met me in front of this girl so I seem cool? Motherfucker didn't show up. So thank you, Tyler.
He's like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, that's exactly prima donna.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, I thought that would be something that would have happened. I feel like, you know, we're still kind of there, but I where that could obviously potentially happen. I don't, you know, you never rule anything out. You've seen crazier things, but I just want to know how it plays out with the Cody story, you know, because Cody, you know, if after the Royal Rumble, Sammy was obviously probably the biggest baby face, right? But then you fast forward to the Monday Night Raw and the Heyman Cody Rhodes exchange. Now Cody Rhodes becomes the biggest baby face in the company again. So it's almost like he took it back. It might have taken a week later or whatever, but you know, so it's going to be kind of interesting how to see what they do, because that I definitely think that what Tyler was suggesting is something that was probably on the table at some point.
See, I'm going to go a different route and say Sami Zayn created a problem for WWE booking, where I think they just threw Sami Zayn in there because he wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. He'll get some laughs with the Bloodline. They'll turn on him, kick him out. No one will care about it. And then he'll go off and do some comedy act down the line, or, you know, feud to see who's going to face somebody for the Intercontinental Champion, and everybody moves on. People seem to care. Sami got over, and I think it created a crazy booking problem, because now, you know, you have people wanting to see Sami over Cody, who they brought Cody in to be the face of the company.
Well, I don't necessarily know if that's actually the case, but I do think that, like, Sammy's always had the crowd since he's been, I mean, at least in the last couple of years that I've seen, when he was an IC champ, I think he had the crowd there as a heel. So I don't think that they knew what they had on their hands. But honestly, and a lot of people feel this way, it wasn't until the inclusion of Sami Zayn into the Bloodline story that it actually became interesting to a larger audience. I know for me, you know, that's exactly what happened for me in my case. But I definitely don't think that he's not a superstar. I don't think he's not like a guy that can, you know, I think there's a few things that hold him back, but at the end of the day, like, they said the same things about Mick Foley.
Let me ask you this off the top of the head question. If you were to rank these three moments, the birth of Kofi Mania because of the fans, Daniel Bryan because of the fans, and now Sami Zayn because of the fans, where would Sami Zayn rank up in those two moments for you?
I would probably say I would go Kofi, Sami, Bryan, honestly. I mean, I love Bryan Danielson, or Daniel Bryan, American Dragon. I mean, I used to watch him on the indies all the time. So, and Japan, the Japanese stuff he did was always very, very good. When he got to the WWE, it took a lot away from him, I think, in a weird way. But he, you know, as talented as he is, turned that around and, you know, made something out of it.
Well, this is from Dion. I'm going to leave where he's from and his last name off. Dion, Dennis, please stop being some kind of dictator asshat every week. I keep writing and asking Lars about Rancid and his thoughts on the landscape of music, and every fucking week you keep not picking my emails. Fuck you, dude. I got your email, buddy.
Well, check it out. This is not a podcast about Rancid. This is not a podcast about music. This is a podcast about professional wrestling. So if you want to know about my schedule, or if you have questions for me, you can always ask them to me. If you see me in person, I'm happy to take my time and tell you what you need to know, if it's something that I can answer, obviously. But you know, this is a wrestling podcast. This is not about, you know, Rancid, or, you know, this is about our fandom. It has nothing to do with music. If anything, it's opposite of that. And that's the reason why I do it. For me personally, and Dennis, I appreciate the fact that, you know, you keep it about wrestling. But this is kind of what I enjoy when I'm not doing those other things. This is a true passion of mine, and it has been since, you know, I was, before I was in bands. So, you know,
And hang on one sec, Dion's mom. Make sure he doesn't send those emails anymore. Sorry, she's over his, Dion's mom's.
Now you're being mean, Dennis.
Yes, I am. Dion, I appreciate the email. I read one of them. Have a good day. How about that?
Moving on.
All right. Kenyon Marsek wants to know, why is it so far hard for me to connect with Cody Rhodes? There's something about this guy I just don't like.
You know, I had the same problem with him when he got into AEW, like the later on, you know, the last year or so that he was in AEW. Obviously, I loved the Stardust thing. I really loved that thing. I mean, I loved what he was doing with his brother. I thought that was the best, you know, thing that I had seen on TV in a long time. I guess I was the only one, maybe. And I definitely connected with him there. I just don't, for me now, watching him and watching those Seth Rollins matches, because, you know, it was kind of like, you know, Seth is such like that hipster douche. You know, he's just like kind of a hipster douche dude that like thinks he's doing you a favor at the coffee shop by making you a cup of coffee. So I, you know, and it's, I don't know how much that is of him in real life. I don't know. But yeah, so I feel like, you know, watching him beat up a hipster douche is kind of what made me like him. You know, I don't know.
You know, I kind of get it. I think my problem with Cody Rhodes is every single Cody Rhodes promo is the same. I came up.
I 100% totally disagree. And if you haven't seen that exchange between him and Paul Heyman, then you're, then to say that.
Oh, we don't agree on, this might be the first time we don't agree on something.
No, we don't agree on a lot of stuff, Dennis. It's just not televised.
Oh,
But I mean, the thing I will say is, like, if you didn't see that promo between him and Paul Heyman, then you can't use that argument. He doesn't do the same promo. He was the one that captured that moment. Paul Heyman obviously is great to work with, and, you know, obviously elevates people he's with because he's just a genius in that sense and learned from, you know, Cody's dad. But honestly, like, you know, I don't think that I think that argument is old and tired. I don't believe that to be true. I think that he's the face of that company, and I feel like it's about time, and I feel like he needed to mature a little bit. But if you're having a problem connecting, I get it, because I don't fucking get Roman Reigns, right? So it's like, I never have, I never will. I just find him boring.
Let's do one more before we bring our guest, David Finley, back on. Chad Jameson from Texas. What storyline-wise wrestler is the dumbest wrestler not figuring out a swerve in the history of wrestling for you? So I think he's saying, what wrestler, storyline-wise, was the dumbest wrestler because he couldn't figure out when he was getting swerved?
I mean, that's like, I mean,
the only thing I can think about is like Sting always trusting Ric Flair, and we as fans always knew Ric Flair or the Four Horsemen would turn on him. I mean, would you say Hogan in that?
Yeah, I mean, I would go Hogan Macho Man, because yeah. I always felt like that was like, you know, I mean, that probably played out in real life a little bit too, you know. And if you, you know, I mean, Hogan, I don't think is known for his honesty. I don't think people go, well, Hulk Hogan, he was honest, you know? But yeah, I would say more like the Hulk Hogan macho thing, maybe. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Bret Hart, right. Vince McMahon.
That might be another good one. All right, listen, guys, you want to get your emails in, wrestlingperspective@gmail.com. We always have room for them. We'll make sure we get them. I will tell you, Adam and Nick, we'll get to yours next week, but we got them. Guys, thank you so much for every week for emailing us. And in just a second, we have David Flair. So we'll be right back. David Finley. Sorry, I'm like, in my mind, I'm ready to get to the next segment.
I think Dennis has got it.
Yeah. So
a little time,
a little too much. David Finley, New Japan Pro Wrestling, will be on in 2 seconds to talk about the San Jose show, which Lars will be at. So we'll be right back. Lars, we're back. David Finley joining us. And Dave, welcome back to the show. It's been quite some time since you've come on. We're super glad that you are here and talking about the New Japan Pro Wrestling San Jose show coming up. Lars, when is that, since you'll be there?
I believe it's the 19th. Is that correct, Dave?
It is Saturday. I probably should have known this right off the
top. I know. So same with us.
I believe it is Saturday the 18th.
The 18th. It's the 18th, but it's sold out. Yeah. So it doesn't even matter.
You can watch it any place you get your pay-per-view. So order now. It's going to be the hottest pay-per-view ticket.
I think you can get it on pay-per-view through Fight TV. If memory serves me correct. So I'm correct. Yes. And I'm pretty excited about it. But anyways, Dennis.
Dave, last time we talked to you, you were, I believe at that time, you were tag team champion in Impact and maybe New Japan at the same time?
No, I think I was just the Impact Tag Team Champion at the time. Yeah, it's been a minute. Thanks for having me back. Glad to be back.
A lot's changed. Now you are venturing out on your own. You know, you don't have your buddy Juice with you right now, which is a shame. I liked you both as a tag team. Is there an adjustment for you now? Because you kind of lose, and I've listened to many interviews back then and now, and you kind of refer to him as your big brother. And now you're venturing off into this wrestling landscape without your big brother.
Well, I'm actually really enjoying being on my own. It's been cool. I got to do the G1. I think I did a pretty good job in the G1. I main evented a pay-per-view against Will Ospreay unsuccessfully. Against him for the United States Championship. So it's been kind of successful. Had a couple really, really close ones. But I'm really chasing that big one this next year.
Well, you know, New Japan is obviously making a bigger splash here in America with TV, with partnerships, you know, with Impact. You know, you see some of the wrestlers on, you know, pretty much a lot of the different TV shows. How are you seeing this company grow? Because you kind of were there sort of at the precipice of what's happening right now.
Well, so I've been there kind of right around when they first got New Japan World. So I've kind of been along the ride since 2015.
Right.
So just to see the presence of New Japan grow in the States has been really cool. I slowly but surely we're becoming more widely recognized. I think New Japan has the highest caliber of professional wrestling. I think that's the standard that we carry proudly. I think, you know, any fan of wrestling likes good wrestling. So the more eyes we can get on New Japan, I think the more it's going to grow. It's just an organic thing that'll happen.
Just the other day, and kind of sticking on this, I kind of noticed there's, I'd say maybe the generation before you, we always talk about how there's not much loyalty in sports, whether it's pro sports, baseball, basketball, and even wrestling. You're so one of those guys that seem to be the exception to the rule where you keep coming back home to New Japan. You're happy there. You've mentioned in many interviews how this is where you want to be. This is where you want to grow. Is that something that, I guess the question is, how does that seed get planted in you where you're not chasing the contract, but you're chasing the skill and you seem to be chasing getting better over the big contract?
Yeah. So I want to be world champion.
You are my
as everyone knows. Yeah. Thank you. As everyone, I'm a fourth generation wrestler. Wrestling is ingrained in me. It's all we talk about. When I'm with my dad, when I'm with my grandfather, it's like wrestling, wrestling, wrestling. But my family hasn't had a world championship. So for me, to be the pinnacle, to be at the pinnacle of wrestling would be to be the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. So like I have unfinished business in New Japan. Like that's been my goal since day one. And like I can't go anywhere else. Don't want to go anywhere else until really ever. But like that's my goal. And until I achieve that, I'm not crossing any other bridges.
Well, there's been a lot of development with the character and there's been different sorts of looks and things that have happened over the last, you know, couple years, and you kind of do one thing and do one thing over here. So what's inspiring you right now? Where are you at with that creatively as far as like how you're presenting yourself?
So right now I call myself the Rebel, and to me it's representative of kind of just how I feel about like growing up in the New Japan system. You know, I've done everything by the book, and my accolades are far and few between. And so for me, it's like, no, I got to do things my way. I got to do things as a Finlay, not as a New Japan young boy, not as a New Japan wrestler, but I got to do things as a Finlay. I got to do things my way. So that's kind of how I approach, you know, my matches, any people that I'm feuding with. It's just like, I got to make this about me.
Well, how are you separating the New Japan new boy to the man that you're becoming now? I mean, it's like, that's where I really want to get a little bit into this, because, you know, you've kind of identified yourself as New Japan. Does that make sense? So is it, yes, is it conflicting with what you're trying to do now?
I don't think so. For me, the big difference maker is my shillelagh. You know, I carry that as one. It's kind of like my banner going into battle. Like, I, this represents the Finlay family, but also, like, it's my insurance policy. It's, you know, it's a weapon. In Irish culture, this is like, you know, once you have your shillelagh, this is, you're a man. This is your rite of passage. But its number one intention is as a weapon. So, to me, and time will show, time will tell. But to me, the shillelagh is the difference maker.
Well, and you know what? I just want to say that your father hit me in the head with the shillelagh once in Madison, Wisconsin. So
really,
yes, and it fucking hurt, bro.
Yeah, my little brother used to chase me around the house with, my dad had like 5 or 7 or 8 of them laying around all over. So like my little brother is 10 years younger than me, would like chase me around the house with these things, just winging them at me. So I know how they feel.
Well, your dad was always very gracious with me, and you know, so, but he hit me right there. Oh my God, it hurt for days. I digress.
You know, this, at least for me, following you, this might seem like the first time you've really leaned into your Irish heritage in a, mm-hmm, in a wrestling gimmick. I know there's a lot of guys that go out there and work really hard to separate themselves from their parents' legacy. You seem like a guy that it just kind of came natural, where there wasn't much, is David Finlay going to be like his dad? Is David Finlay going to be an Irish character? Is David, you know, so it seemed like that wasn't something that might be hard for you to do, and I may be projecting that onto you. So what was the motivation to bring in this Irish gimmick into the rebel person?
So I'll backtrack a bit on that. So when I first started wrestling, I was like 19 years old. The last thing I wanted to be was my dad. So I was like adamant on like, I'm not going to have any similarities whatsoever. But I'm so much like my dad naturally that it just like, as time has passed, I've kind of like morphed into a version of him in real life. Like, I mean, we have similar sense of humor, similar mannerisms. I think we wrestle similarly. So just kind of embracing like who I am. I am a Finlay. To me, that name carries weight. That comes with like an expectation. So for me, it was as opposed to like shying away from what I am, embracing it and trying to really reach my full potential of like what I can be in wrestling.
Well, I think that's an interesting thing that you bring up. And I feel like it's like natural in our lifetimes, right? So, you know, you try to separate so much from family and these things, even though you love them and whatever, but you're trying to find your own individuality. But at some point you kind of come back and you kind of go, well, fuck yeah, I am a pagan Viking or whatever. You're Irish, you know, with a shillelagh, you know? So it's like, at some point you accept that. So was there a struggle internally? Because you've always spoken highly about your father. You obviously have a lot of respect for the, I mean, like you said, 4 generations of wrestling. But do you feel like there was a struggle for you to kind of come back to that kind of, how would you say it, that heritage?
Yeah, I did. Especially when I first decided that I was going to, you know, incorporate the shillelagh as, you know, part of me. I was real unsure about it because, like, on one, like, it's been done. My dad did it. But also, like, it is like a heritage thing. It's an Irish thing. It's not just a, my, right. It means something. Also I think there's a lot of routes that I can go with it. You know, in wrestling, and I really feel like we've only, you know, scratched the surface on that, but like, it was a real big struggle because like you said, it's like finding that, like, of that balance of like who I really am and my own individuality, and also like who I am as like my family and my family name. Cause like, you know, if you're a Hart, there's an expectation on you. If you're a Mysterio, there's an expectation on you, you know? It comes with the territory. So it's really just finding like who I am.
Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s, still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day, and Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything, and you won't believe how simple it is.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Within like who I really am and can't escape.
You know, to kind of follow up on this whole Shillelagh thing, when you get it, is it this may be a multi-level question, so bear with me here. Was it your dad's? Did you have one made? Was there like a, hey, dad, can I get this? And there's a tear that runs down his eyes. Like, I thought you'd never ask. And he opens up this box and there's a light and he's like, this is my favorite. Take good care of it. Or did you like throw it at you and you're like, cool, bring it back Wednesday.
Okay, so I texted my dad. I was like, hey, I want to start using the Shillelagh. Do you have any left? Because I'm pretty sure he sold them in Japan. He sold a lot of them in Japan. So he actually had one left. He was like, yeah, I got it. I'm like, cool. So I drive over to his house, go get it. And this thing's like, the knob on it's like this big. It's so big. I'm like, I don't like how this feels in my hand. It feels clunky. So I ended up having my own made. It feels way better. Also, my dad's was like from like 15 years ago. I think he got it in like 2006. So like the wood's flaking off. It's all like discolored. It's like half rotting. Like it's just not, it was not sturdy anymore. So yeah, I got my own Shillelagh because I wanted it to be my own.
Well, you know, thinking about the great Irish wrestlers that we've had, you know, from the European days, Germany, England, obviously, you know, and their style, it's such a, and it, I mean, I guess, you know, your learning curve is more of that UK European kind of style of wrestling. Do you think that fits better with the Japanese pro wrestling than the American, or would you say the opposite?
Honestly, I think it can go either way. At least for how wrestling is like today, I feel like, you know, like American style versus like the, you know, the UK European style versus like the Japanese style. Obviously they have their differences, but like, I feel like a lot of them have borrowed from each other to where like, it kind of goes wherever you want it to go. You know, it can work in America on TV. It can work in Japan where, you know, it's way more competitive. It kind of works wherever you want it to go, in my opinion.
You know, I kind of want to jump back into this whole tag team wrestler thing. And once again, last time you were on, you talked a little bit about it, and you've talked a little bit about it in between. Now you are venturing out. And I think even in that interview, Lars, if I'm correct, he was like, I don't want to team with Juice forever because I want to be a world champion. Now you have that opportunity. I feel like you're welcome. I helped you with that.
Because thank you very much.
You're welcome. But what... I'm trying to think of the best way to ask this about like being typecast, because I feel like you were kind of close to being typecast as a tag team guy. And in wrestling, when you start to get typecast as the funny guy, the tag team guy, it's so hard to break out of it if you can. Somehow you and Juice both avoided being tag team guys. You venture out on your own. When you look back, do you realize how close you were to being typecast as that guy?
Yeah. And I think that's part of where like the split came. I think Juice and I just kind of realized that like neither of us really like our goals and aspirations did it not involve tag team wrestling? Like, we'd done, you know, we'd been world champions in New Japan. We'd been world champions in Impact. We'd won World Tag League over New Japan. We won the belts at the Tokyo Dome. Like, what? We've done it. Do we want to do it again? Or do we want to move forward? And I, for both of us, it was like, nah, we have, like, our own goals that we want to achieve. So it just kind of, like, naturally happened to where we both – also, like, we, work-wise, we didn't know, like, where we were going to end up working. And it was, we didn't want to be tied to each other either. So it was just like, let's see, you know, where we both end up and take it from there. So just, we just kind of like mutually decided that we wanted to pursue our own thing.
You mentioned that the G1, and I kind of wanted to get into that a little bit, because I always feel like those G1s are the cream of the crop, or at least like the new up and comers, where the light needs to shine, or, you know, just the badasses, right? And I think that tournament's always been that way. You know what I mean? Some are better than others. But so you get invited. What are you thinking about yourself at that point? I'm just curious, like, what's going on in your head? Because that's basically saying, I mean, you're kind of one of the ones here.
Yeah, so I'd wanted to do the G1 since I got to New Japan. I started off as a junior heavyweight, but like still, I was like, my goals were, I want to be a heavyweight. I want to do a G1. And it took me 7 years to finally get in the G1. Part of that was, you know, pandemic and, you know, travel issues and visa issues and like injury. So like it was snake bit for a while. So for me to finally get to the point where like, all right, I'm in this thing. It's go time. Because I feel like in New Japan, you don't really have the respect of the fans because you haven't been able to prove yourself as a pro wrestler until you've been in the G1, right? Because I really think that's where, you know, you get thrown into the deep end and it's sink or swim. So to finally be able to like put the work in to be like, no, I'm as good as I believe I am. I can do this. I'm one of the best wrestlers in the world. To finally be able to like put that into action and show that I can do it felt really good to me.
Do you, when they come to you, do they ask you if you want to be in it? Or do you kind of go, hey, listen, this year I notice you're two or three guys short. Can I get into this? How does being invited in that? Because I believe Petey was in a G1. I believe it's either a G1 or something super, like that. He was
I think
in.
It was a super junior.
Okay, yeah.
So for me, we were talking about like just the future moving forward with what we're going to do. Just with work, and they brought it up at the same time that I brought it up. Like, they were like, we're gonna put you in the G1, and I was going like, hey, I really need to be in the G1. So it was just a mutual agreement of like, all right, yeah, this is where we both want to go with this. So yeah, I was really happy. I'd been training for it for a long time. I was a little sad that it was a smaller like block system. There was four blocks this year, so it was only six singles matches. Usually it's two blocks, you get like 9 or 10 singles matches. So like I really wanted to get thrown into the deep waters, but you know, it was a special G1. They switched up the system, so I honestly don't know, but I would assume this next year is going to be back to the regular one. So I'll really like to put in those 9 hard singles matches and you know, showcase what I can do even more.
Well, you know, as a wrestler and as a foreign wrestler in Japan, I mean, you know, I've always been sort of curious on how you go about lobbying for yourself in that, because obviously there's a language barrier. There's all kinds of barriers there, you know, and if you go to Japan, you know that the cab drivers don't speak English. Nobody really, it's not really like a language that's really known by a lot of the Japanese people. And I mean, we're fortunate enough when we go over there, you get a translator. I'm sure that they have that there too. But I mean, is there a way, how long did it take for you to kind of understand how to communicate what your needs and wants were without looking like, you know, looking stupid, I guess, for lack of a better term?
I mean, I think to some extent, I probably still look a little bit stupid. but I mean, I would say probably the first 3 months I got there, it was just a nightmare. I had no idea what was going on. Like the signs are all squiggles. I don't understand a word of what anyone's saying. I remember my first day at the dojo. I know I probably told this story before, but like we start off the day with 1,000 squats and they're counting in Japanese, and I have no idea what number we're on. So I'm just watching the clock. So like that was like my start in New Japan, or just in Japan in general. And eventually just like with being immersed in the culture and the language, like I figured out how to survive. Mm-hmm. Like I knew numbers. I knew what my number was at like truck stops. So I didn't have to ask anybody anymore. Like I could ask for like the basic things that, you know, I would need. Now I'm at a point where like I can enjoy my life in Japan and I don't have any issues. Cause I know, you know, I'm a creature of habit. So I go to the same spots. I order the same things. I know what I want. So like now it's no issue, but it took like a good 3 months before I was like, okay, I can kind of navigate this place.
Right.
Earlier in the episode, we were talking about yesterday. I want not say yesterday. It was a week ago or so. I got recognized in public. Someone's like, oh, I love the podcast. You're on it. When you go over to Japan, do you remember the first time someone came up and was like, David Finley? Because when that, I'm sure you get it a little bit over here before you went over there. But, you know, now you're over there, different fan base, different culture. How was that for you?
So I actually didn't start getting recognized in the States until I started doing Impact. But in Japan, I do remember the first time that happened to me because it was bizarre. Because I grown up, I'd seen this happen with my dad a lot. So to a point where like I knew it was unusual, but it was also like normal. But again, like that was happening to my dad. So the first time it happened to me, I'm like, oh, what? Like, oh, I'm starting to make it. And yeah, I was in Japan at the train station by the dojo, like in like the shopping mall. I was in an H&M on the second floor, and someone came up to me and was like, oh, David Finlay. I'm like, hell yeah, I am. So yeah, I took a picture with them and stuff, and I just felt like the coolest motherfucker that day.
Well, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, and I don't think I asked you last time you were here, but as being like a foreign wrestler in Japan, do any of the Japanese wrestlers kind of give you guys a grace period, like, because of the communication, maybe there's a botch in something or a misunderstanding in a match or I mean, have you ever had like legitimate like heat with somebody because maybe you didn't quite understand what was going on and or anything like that?
Not that I can think of. Everyone's like really gracious and understanding of like the language barrier. Most of the times they'll speak English to us, you know, we'll try and, or at least I'll try and like use the Japanese that I do know. So it's like a blend of like really bad Japanese and like English that's like pretty good. So obviously they're speaking the English and I'm speaking the bad Japanese. Communication wise, like it we figured it out. It's a weird hybrid way of communicating, but like it seems to be pretty smooth.
I kind of want to go back because I was thinking about one of Lars's questions about the evolution of you, and you go from clean cut to scruffy to a rebel. And you know, I know last time you were on, we talked about your creative process and the evolution of you. Now you are reinventing yourself. You are now top of the card. You've worked your way up. Do you tie the two together where this is why, because I'm here, or is it a happy accident where the new look, Will Ospreay and you main eventing, come together at the perfect time?
I think for me, it was just, I knew I needed to do something different than what I was doing to get to where I wanted to be. So a lot of it was just like taking a gamble on like, well, let's see what happens. And I just so happened to find success. So I think it was more of a happy accident than anything else. But it just stemmed from like, all right, well, I'm not where I want to be. So like, I need to change something about me to get to where I want to be. So it really just came from like, I guess almost like desperation, I guess.
Now I got a follow up, Lars. Sorry.
Yeah.
We have a lot of young guys that listen to this that want to always get into the wrestling industry and the business, but they don't know how to put those creative building blocks into place. Do you have any advice to give to someone as a guy who has just kind of done it and has been successful with doing it that you can say, hey, you know, if you're looking for inspiration, this is how I did it.
I mean, for me, I just kind of took things that like I like in my real life. Like I grew up, I was like a skate punk kid. So like I like punk rock music. So like a lot of it is just like, oh, I've seen like different, you know, bands dressed like this, or I've seen this on different, you know. So like the look kind of stems from like a rock vibe for me. And it's just like taking inspiration from things that like are me and like finding a way to incorporate it. So that way, like what I'm putting out into the world is still genuine. Like it is genuinely like a part of me.
Well, and also I think that what's going on right now is unique because there's not like that kind of edgy sort of punk rock kind of thing that's happening in that company. You know, I mean, there's a guy in Daisy Dukes. You got, you know, who yeah. I love. I love him. I love him. But, you know, you got, and everybody, and or you got Will Ospreay. It looks like a goddamn ostrich. You know what I mean? So it's like, whom I love too. You know, I love that. I mean, he's so flamboyant. He's, and, you know, there's so many different personalities. And that's one of the things why I love that company so much is because, you know, there's everybody's kind of got an individual thing, you know? Coming to that place for you, just with your history and everything like that, you know, and now that you've kind of found this groove, it's like, where does it go from here? Like, do you take it that much more extreme? I mean, you know, are we going to see you with Great Muta paint on at some point? Just like fucking upside down crosses like King Diamonds and some shit?
Well, I have no plans of Great Muta paint. I don't think I could pull it off quite as awesome as he could. but I mean, time will tell. We'll see. You know, for me, a lot of it's just trial and error and experimenting like on the go. And my creative process is very much like I spitball things. And I take it from there. And some things work, some things don't. And it really have to like put it out and see like the feedback I get to know like what works and what doesn't. Cause like I can be like, oh, I have all these ideas, but like if it doesn't resonate with people, then it's not gonna work. So I have to like, it kind of just is like what resonates and what doesn't.
Well, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to also say to you is that it is working. What you're doing right now is working. It is speaking to me. It's like I saw you and I was like, oh, yeah, that's his old shit. That's his culture. Like, that's boom, boom, boom. It's like a great amalgamation. A lot of the times when you get like an Irish character, you know, other than maybe your father, let's say, there's not a lot of grit to it. So, yeah. You know, how do you, you know, coming up the way that you come up, do you think that, and I don't think there's a lot of grit in a lot of the newer kind of professional wrestlers, you know what I mean? Was that something that you feel like you sort of, suffered to get in the sense, or do you feel like that was something you were kind of born with? Was it like, you know, part of the lifestyle and in your family? Like, what do you think that, because that's, I can tell that with you. So I don't, is that something that you ever been able to put your finger on?
I grew up, my dad was always a tough guy. To this day, his default is tough guy. You know, it's like that. You don't always have to tough guy, but always tough guys. It's ridiculous. And that comes from like he grew up in Belfast, Northern Ireland during, you know, a civil war basically. So yeah. Like he bombs going off and he was having like fight for his life quite often. So like he grew up in a very rugged time to grow up. My grandfather, same thing. He was a steel worker as well as a pro wrestler. And he would do bar fights. I had a great, great grandfather that worked on the building crew of the Titanic. And apparently during like their lunch breaks, they would just bare knuckle box for pints of Guinness. So like, like having grit and fighting and just not being afraid to get like down and dirty and gritty is like ingrained in being a Finlay. And that was one of the things where I'm like, I need to embrace this and not shy away from this because this is part of what makes me unique.
100%.
You just said something a second ago with Lars's, I think, first question here, where you guys were talking about the evolution of you. And it kind of hit me. In the pro wrestling industry, wrestlers get to a certain point and they're afraid to tinker with their image or who they are. And so it feels like they're stuck trying to protect and grow themselves because they don't have the balls to go, you know what, maybe I am going to change the shirt or I'm going to not do this move or do this, you know, mannerism. What gives you that confidence then to say, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to go out there and try doing this and then this and this when you are at a spot, you are safe, and maybe there is no need to put it on the line to see if it works or doesn't work.
I think because I enjoy the creative process of just like constantly evolving, I've grown to really enjoy like just like the quiet hours of like, what do I want to try? What do I want to do? Kind of, you know, like studying wrestling or, you know, just the things that I want to try. And I just enjoy the whole process of like growing and evolve. Cause like I, when I am done wrestling, I want to be considered one of the greats. And I'm not there yet, which means like, I need to keep growing, in order to achieve that. That's what I want my legacy to be. I want to go down as one of the greats. So to me, it's like, I'm going to keep grinding and finding this path. And, you know, I might stumble. I might, you know, I might strike gold, who knows, but like, I'm going to keep trying until like, that is what I become. And that's what motivates me to keep, you know, cause I would rather try and fail than just be like scared to try things. And I think that is, I'd rather just go for it.
Well, you know, I want to wrap my last question up with just about this San Jose show. I mean, you're coming in basically to California. You got a sold out house already. I mean, you know, and we're still a couple of weeks away from when it's actually going to come down, or actually at this point, maybe a couple of days. But, you know, how, your opponent and these people that you're wrestling with here, it's like, let me hear what you got for them.
So Bobby Fish holds a singles victory over me. He beat me in my first Super Juniors, 2015. And then he went off to, you know, WWE. He went off to AEW, but he still holds that win over me. And I know for a fact I'm better than him. I know I can beat him. I know I can avenge that loss. So that's why I want to face Bobby Fish in San Jose. That's what I'm coming with. I want my win back.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up with my question, and also along the lines of San Jose, where before we hit record, I sat here and listened to you and Lars talk about the wrestling scene in San Jose. And I've not seen wrestling. I've seen wrestling in many different states, but I've not seen it on the East Coast. I've not seen it on the West Coast. So what, I guess this is for both of you guys, what makes that San Jose wrestling scene so different, where they just sold out a New Japan show and, you know, there's not many shows right now that go anywhere and get sold out?
Well, for me, the venue that we're running, San Jose Civic Center, I think every time we go there, the people are electric, the wrestling's electric. It's just a great venue. It's a night of partying and wrestling, and it's just, it's awesome. The people are coming to have a good time. We're coming to give them a good time. And it's just, you know, it's one of those venues where, like, you know, no matter what, like, it's going to be hot. It's going to be good. Everyone's going to go home raving about how great a time they had.
And I would say, you know, there's such a deep history and culture of professional wrestling in that area, because you got to remember, San Jose never really had a professional sports team until the San Jose Earthquakes. And even then they went away a few times. My point is that the one thing that was consistent is you had wrestling in that place. I saw Polynesian Pacific Championship Wrestling in that building. Of course, you had the big time wrestling that used to come up and run that building. You had AAA would run that building. So, I mean, I feel like, and also, you know, California, and especially in that area, it's very multicultural. So you get, and it's also very smart. And I think there, California in on the indies and on in this area, there's a lot of smarter fans. There's a, you know, and you also have a big Japanese population. So I feel like culturally, as far as pro wrestling goes, you know, it's actually a really good place. It's actually probably better than a San Francisco. You know what I mean? It's probably better than a Los Angeles in a lot of ways, just because of the type of people that will come, because it'll be a melting pot of different people from different kind of places with different cultures and stuff like that. And I think that's why it works there, because wrestling, I think, is synonymous with all cultures.
I agree completely.
Dave, where can people find you, my friend?
You can find me on Twitter at TheDavidFinlay. You can find me on Instagram at SuperSuperDave. And that's the only places I really am. Or you can watch me on New Japan World, like all the time.
Well, for everybody watching, the show is over. We're going to say our goodbyes off the air. David Finlay, maybe you'll become a 3-time guest here soon. We're glad to have you back. Let's not wait a year and a half to get you back on. Let's do a little bit sooner, my friend. All right.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, Wrestling Perspective, follow do all that stuff. Watch. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.